Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps. I am excited to have another great guest. And again, it's 2020. We've already gone through the foresight. Now we're actually into the actual work that we have to do now. And so what I've been doing is interviewing some people who are running their own companies, but also have experience helping other companies be successful. And I'm hoping through the interviews that we're going to be able to, I'm hoping through the interviews, we're going to be able to basically pull some knowledge out of their heads and put it into yours to help you get a better idea of what you need to do in 2020 to be successful. Today, we are going to be interviewing a bud and a very, very smart dude. His name is Mark James. He's with Performance Advisors Group. And he is somebody that I met a long time ago. But first off, let me ask you, how you doing, Mark?
I am well. Appreciate being here and happy new year.
Why, thank you, sir. I appreciate it too. So, I met you a long time ago. Matter of fact, back when I met you, I think you were passing out green stamps at some grocery store in Hinsdale, Illinois, if I'm not mistaken, or was it Hillside or something like that? No, that's not necessarily true. You were working with the green stamps people, but you were not passing out little books with those little stamps that you licked and put in there. So how do you go from working in green stamps to what you're doing today?
Well, in those days, like you, we were both about 5 inches taller.
Yes.
It was earlier in our careers. But yeah, I did not pass out green stamps, but I worked for the incentive and motivation division of S&H green stamps called S&H Motivation. And that's when we met. And in those days, I was doing sales and marketing for them. And my primary responsibility was helping companies, primarily in the B2B space, with incentive and motivation programs for their constituent audiences, salespeople, employees, customers, and so on. So that's when we met. Prior to that, my career goes back to the oil business, actually. I, out of college at the University of Illinois, I spent 9.5 years in the oil business in sales and marketing jobs. So really throughout my whole career, I've cut my teeth on being in business and being around the sales and marketing aspects of businesses. I grew up in a small retail family. My parents owned and operated a jewelry store, a retail jewelry store, for 54 years. And if there's one piece of advice I give young people today when they bother to ask an old guy like me, at some point in your life, you should experience retail and being on the inside of the counter serving the public, because it's the best way to understand how the wheels of commerce ultimately turn and how it impacts everybody. Because if you can understand how to do stuff at retail, the rest of business is easier to understand and to comprehend.
Yeah, I thoroughly concur with that because, I mean, I started out actually one of my first gigs. I was a shoe salesman. That's how I started out in business and then kind of grew from there over the years. So let me ask you one quick question is, when you say motivation, okay, today I think of motivation as, hey, if you sell, $10,000 worth of widgets, we're going to give you a company t-shirt. And we even have this catalog that you can go into and pick out your own things. Is that what motivation was back then too, was basically giving away gifts?
Oh yeah, that was the traditional beginnings of the incentive industry. And it's a relatively small industry. Was based upon you do certain good things on the job. You sell more widgets than you did yesterday. Here's a catalog. Go pick out some merchandise for yourself. And of course, travel worked into it as well. Top salespeople, you're going to get to go to Hawaii for a week and bring your spouse along. So I know that business very well. What a lot of people don't understand is that when you look at using incentives, and there's definitely a place for incentives in business, you need to understand that they're not a strategy. They are a tactic. and it's all about capturing mindshare. And it's one tool of many that you can use to modify or alter behavior. But it's not necessarily the end-all be-all, because what's more important in the long run, especially with employees or distribution channel people or ultimately even customers, is what can you do to connect a personal meaning to what an individual does to what you want them to do or what their role in an organization is. And you can do that necessarily not having to use incentives. So incentives have their place, but they're not a magic bullet. They're not an end-all to be-all.
Gotcha. So in today's marketplace, you know, a lot of CEOs, I mean, they're always looking for ways to, you know, grow their business, grow their sales, increase their marketing. I mean, I've seen so many different tactics and ideas and things of that nature. And one of the places in the sandboxes I play in is the social media space or the online marketing space. And, you know, but what I see a lot of times is consultants that come in and say, hey, you know what you need to do? You need to be on TikTok. No, you need to be on Facebook. You need to be doing retargeting ads to LinkedIn because that's where your audience is playing. Hey, you know what you really, really need is to do YouTube videos and get those up there and add some SEO and throw that in, and Google Analytics will tell you exactly the engagement that you will get. And most of these SEO guys and CEO guys are just kind of talking to each other and CEO goes, okay, go for it, go away. But that's not really a tactic to grow sales. This is,
I call that the shiny key syndrome.
Ah,
yeah, yeah, and you see so much of that, and you know, in a larger sense, one of the things I've observed in working with a whole different set of clients in multiple industries with different kinds of products and services. At the end of the day, after doing this for 40 years, and when I, you know, over the time I'm, you know, now 5 inches shorter, but I've learned a number of different things. And one of the things I've learned is that you can kind of, if you look at organizations and how they approach their marketing, you can kind of distill down to five common mistakes that organizations make when they set out to market or to generate demand or acquire business. And those five mistakes include the one you're talking about. It's what I call the shiny key syndrome. And I actually developed an anagram that describes five things you can do to eliminate these common mistakes. And I'll cover them real quickly. But the five common mistakes are doing marketing as a series of one-off tactics with no strategy connecting them. That's what you just described. That's what I call the shiny key syndrome. The second is winging it. Let's try X and see what we get. Another one is, this is a big one, expecting overnight results, particularly in the B2B world. That's a very temptation expectation to be sure, but expecting overnight results can be the death of good marketing.
And a lot of people promise that. I see this all the time, especially in the social media world, online, on LinkedIn, on Facebook. And they say, hey, this one LinkedIn strategy got me 20 high-ticket clients in less than a week.
Yeah. Oh, how many times have we seen that? We both have.
Right. That's what it is.
Yeah,
right?
That's what it is. And when you see that, be suspect. Ask lots of questions. You know, fourth one is understanding that trial and error is a good part of a good marketing strategy, but not if it's done blindly. So there's a lot of trial and error out there that's not based in any sort of facts or a logical approach. And the last common mistake that organizations make is that their marketing and their messaging are all about them and not the customer. It's almost like the pushy salesman that says, it calls a prospect on the phone and says, hey, you don't know us, but I want to be your new best friend. Right. Same thing happens to marketing. You can't really approach your marketing that way. So given that, and I have seen those mistakes, timeless occurrences throughout my entire career. I know you have too.
Oh yeah. The last one that you're talking about is what I talk in the website world and in the email marketing world. And I call it, they tend to wee-wee all over themselves. Hey, we do this and we do this and we are the best. We've had this going on. We've been in business for 65 years. Wee-wee-wee-wee-wee, you know. Like, anyways, go on. So start with number one.
Yeah,
Tell us about it.
I developed, here's the way to think about these five, I call them repair before failure marketing principles. In fact, I actually can do this as a workshop for organizations, and I've done it a number of different times at different events, networking events around Chicago. But here are the five repair before failure marketing principles that if you get these right, you're going to eliminate those mistakes that I talked about. And think about them in terms of this anagram, HPPDR. The H stands for the ability to think holistically about what you're doing. That is, think about the whole of what you're doing. Don't think in one-offs. Think big picture first and think tactics then second. The second, the first P after H, HP, is have a plan and stick to it. Winging it doesn't work. You've got to have a plan. And again, you've got to start with the end in mind when you have that, when you have a plan, and work backward to the beginning point. The second P, HPP, is exercise patience. And that goes to that expecting overnight results, a mistake that's made. The thing to think about with marketing is that you need to think about marketing as a journey. It's not necessarily a sprint. You can have sprints as a tactical element within an overall marketing strategy, but overall, your marketing is a journey. And the other thing to keep in mind, marketing is a combination of common sense with a purpose and a method. And quite often, the purpose may be there and the method, certainly everybody understands and tries to go after the methods, but you got to step back and also make sure you're applying common sense to what you're doing.
I think one of the biggest problems with the patient side of things is people attach themselves to something and they don't go and update and modify based on things. So for example, I'll give you a real straightforward thing is, you know, I developed a website 3 years ago for my business. And I paid somebody good money, you know, to design, and somebody good money to write the content, a good web developer who didn't wee-wee all over me. But then I went into the website, and I had to look at it with a critical eye this year, and I say, you know, wait a minute. I don't do that anymore. That's not really my customer. That's not a value that I give customers the way I used to. And I really need to focus on this value because this is better. So one of the things I think that people have to have in that patience in creating that content is the ability to look at it from an objective standpoint. And sometimes it does not hurt to pay somebody to come in and stand next to you and say, yep, well, this is what I see. Do you see the same thing? You know, it's almost like a Rorschach test. Because if you look at your own website long enough, it looks perfect.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's one of the things that I think people have to do is be willing to grow and modify as time goes on.
Yep, because it's a changing environment out there. And part and parcel of that, the other specific recommendation under exercising patience is to understand where your customers are in their purchase journey. Because while your marketing as an organization is a journey, your customers and prospects are on a journey too. They're out doing research. They're out making a decision, or they're beginning to identify they have a need to buy X, Y, or Z. And it's important to understand where that customer or prospect is in their purchase journey, because if you try to pull the trigger too quickly on them and rush them through the journey, and they're still in a place where they're trying to understand that they even have a problem, your marketing is not going to be as successful as opposed to understanding and talking to that prospect in sync with where they are in their purchase journey. That's one of the best ways to think about becoming patient with your marketing.
Right. And I know you've got the DR, but I kind of want to dig into this too, because I think this is uber important. And that is that in that journey, one of the things that I've seen is I've seen a lot of companies come in and say, hey, we can make you know, great stuff. We can do all these things. But the company coming in really focuses more on business to consumer methodologies versus business to business methodologies. And business consumer, this is the way I describe it, and it's not the most pleasant way, but you know, the business to consumer thing is to clean up crap. Okay. Yep. The business to business model is to avoid crap. Right. Yep. You know, usually when somebody is, you know, searching for consumer products, like do I buy toilet paper A or toilet paper B? The business to business model, something has happened where their current supplier has screwed up or something is broken, and they need to make a decision. Now, okay, this is where everybody says, well, you know, you put together just a great website and you do SEO and people will search for it. And it's like, you can't build trust in an online search with 8 seconds.
No.
This is something that could take up to 2 years before of them knowing you, about understanding what you do and how you solve that problem. And you need to get inside the head of those people and say, this is how we solve the problem when things break. And this is why you want to talk to us. We may not be the best fit, but you know what? We certainly know people that can help. So let us be a resource.
Yeah, right? Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Absolutely. And I would also argue, along with what you're saying, is that the need to be patient is more important in the B2B world than the B2C world. For the very reason you spoke, because the cycle times, the sales cycle in the B2B world is longer. And as a result, the customer or the prospect purchase journey is longer as well. So all the more reason to make sure you are understanding and in sync with where that B2B customer or prospect is in their journey. Because you can't rush them. You can't rush them through the journey. It generally is a recipe for failure. So think holistically, you know, think about the whole, don't think in one-offs, you know, think about the big picture first, tactic second, have a plan and stick to it. Start with the end in mind and work backwards. Tie into what the voice of your business is, your values, your mission, and your vision. And then the second P under HPP is exercise patience. Stop expecting overnight results. Marketing is a journey. Okay. Understand where you are. Right. So the D stands for using data. Use data to understand information note about your customers and their behavior. One of my favorite sayings in the business world is from Peter Drucker. If you can't measure it, you can't improve it. Boy, to me, what a true statement. You need to have a good understanding of your customers and their behavior in order to get the right message to the right prospect at the right time. If you're not using data, you're essentially doing a shotgun approach, and you may generally have the target direction in mind, but you're probably going to have a lot of buckshot that flies by the target. Having data allows you to make every bit of that buckshot, or every bullet you send out from a marketing standpoint is going to hit the target where it needs to. That's the way in which you get the highest desired response and behavior at the lowest, best, lowest cost.
Right. And I want to dig in on that too for another perspective, because I see this all the time. Data is huge. I've been working with Google for many, many years. And what I see is that, and this is one of my favorite sayings, is that 87.2% of statistics are made up by the statistician and 63.5% are made up on the spot.
Yeah, right.
And what I've noticed a lot of times with companies is they will go in, and again, this is not every company. There's really good companies and there's some, you know, okay companies. And what some of the okay companies will do is they will basically churn the data so that you only see the positive results that basically, you know, vindicates them getting paid every single month. So in other words, they'll come to you and say, hey, you know, your traffic on your website went from 3,000 to 4,000. But what they won't tell you is, where did that traffic go? Okay, is it going to a blog page? Is it going to a specific product? It behooves you to know that if you're doing something in marketing, whether it's online or in person or a trade show or something like that, and you're getting additional hits to your website, which page did they go to? And the other thing you want to know is how long did they spend on the site? Because a lot of times people say, hey, the traffic went up. Look at this. It's really, really good. And the average time on the site is yada, yada, yada. But, you know, if the average person is only spending 10 seconds or less, there's not a whole lot they can do. So really what you want to say is, you know, I've seen this very strongly with some sites where they will, you know, the homepage will get you like 10 seconds, but somebody gets to a blog and it's like 10 minutes, meaning they read the blog and they click some of the links in the blog and they end up on other pages, and they might even fill out a form and give you their contact info. So this is the one thing I want to implore CEOs, or implore them to implore their staff. And that is, not only take the data at face value, but be an active participant in asking questions and finding out what it means.
Mm-hmm. Let me add on top of that another consideration. When it comes to measuring mm-hmm. results for anything in business, especially in marketing, there are really two steps to measuring results. The first step is actually developing the metric that gives you the result itself. But then the second thing is evaluating the meaning and significance of what that number, what's it telling us? What do we do with the information? So the number itself really is meaningless. It doesn't do anything until you decide what's the meaning and the significance of the number, and what is it going to do to help us better target, or to talk to the customer differently, or to make sure that our products and services are designed in such a way that they're going to be eagerly adopted by these people, because because our marketing is telling us something different than what we're trying to sell. So I would add to what you're saying. I mean, we're in violent agreement with what you're saying, and I would add to it by saying that. The other thing that a lot of organizations do that I think is a mistake that they could avoid is to make sure that you run your marketing off of a dedicated database for marketing itself. I see a lot of organizations that try to run their marketing off of a database that was developed for a different reason, off of the manufacturing database, or off of the sales database, or off of an accounts receivable database, or off of a CFO is trying to determine he's got his view of customers. All of those databases have a different purpose and will sometimes provide you a misleading view of the customer, as opposed to having a database that's designed for marketing itself. So I always recommend that if you don't have a database that you use that's dedicated to your marketing effort itself, you need to do that, because if you're trying to use a different database, you may get a distorted view of what the customer's really all about.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah, and so finally, the last one, but maybe the most important one at the end of the day, is you need to be relevant with your audience. If you can connect with the buyer's emotional state and their needs, you only need 10% of the message to be about you to generate interest, intent, and purchase. The notion of one message does not fit all doesn't apply and hasn't applied for the longest time. My favorite statistic, the statistic is a little old, but in the 1960s, you could reach 85% of the adult female population in the United States with one 60-second commercial on ABC, CBS, or NBC. Today, to have that same reach, you have to be in 100 different places on cable television to have the same reach, because of how splintered and how many more different ways people have today of viewing and getting information that will influence their purchasing or buying behavior. So you need to make sure that you're in the right places and you have your message that's targeted to the right place. Also, part of being relevant, I use this particular comment or saying to demonstrate the point. Think about this. You don't talk to your grandmother the same way you talk to your best friend. The same thing happens in the marketing world. Some customers you need to talk to in a certain way versus others. So 90% of your message should always be on the prospect's customer or the customer's pain points, their needs and their desires, and less about you. The reality is they don't care about you. What they care about is what you can do to solve their needs and their problems. And the last point I would make here is, you know, at the end of the day, favorite line from Jeffrey Gittermer, who is a sales guru who I actually worked with a number of years ago. We worked side by side on some work for Caterpillar. He said he's known for saying that people don't want to be sold, but they do want to buy. So those are those five HPPDR. Those are the five repair before failure principles that if you can get right, you're going to avoid those common mistakes that sink a lot of marketing efforts. And you'll save a lot more time and money too doing it.
Mark, I love it. It's great stuff. It's to the point, very straightforward and simple. And I think each one of these obviously can be delved into. You probably do 3 hours of each one. But we have a very limited amount of time because I like to give my people, just kind of a big, broad brush. But speaking of which, so my last question for you is, if you could give any advice to CEOs or CMOs this year that would be different than what you would have given them last year, what would that be?
I would, that's actually pretty easy. The first thing I would tell them is, because you probably haven't done it in a while, Mr. CEO or Mr. CFO or CMO, go back and look at your core values for your organization. And if you don't have them, you need to identify them and make sure they're clear and communicated to everybody in your organization. Also look at your mission statement and your vision statement and understand and just do a reality check that your mission statement and your vision statement are consistent and they are tied into your core values. Because at the end of the day, the way to think about those three things put together, they're the voice of your business. They're what tell your customers what to expect. And if you've got disconnects among those three, or they're not succinct, and they don't communicate what the customer is going to experience, you're going to have a customer experience issue, and all the marketing in the world can't overcome that. So that would be my first advice, and it's pertinent beginning in the year. Take the time to go back and do a reality check on your core values, your mission, and your vision. Make sure they're set, they're consistent, and then from there, begin to look at, all right, are we doing a good job of communicating that voice to our customers and setting an expectation? And then more importantly, at the end of the day, are we delivering to that? I actually do some workshops where I can help clients to do that kind of a reality check. There are some exercises you can go through with your leadership team on those things.
Awesome, Mark. Great stuff. So if people wanted to get a hold of you and learn more about what you do and how you do it, do me a favor and let them know how to do that.
Sure. Couple of ways real quickly. I can be reached on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/IN/performadvisors. And that's advisors with an O, perform, ADVISORS. Or you can reach me. My email is Mark J, first name, last initial, at performadvisors.com. So it's perform without the A and C E on the end. So just the word perform and then advisors, ORS.com.
Awesome. Mark, this has been a phenomenal time. Great stuff. I really appreciate you coming on and dropping some sizzling hot bacon knowledge bombs on my peeps. I look forward to having you on again in the future and kind of maybe digging into some additional things that C-level people can start to think about when it comes to getting their messages across. Man, you're a wealth of knowledge. So I really appreciate you and your time.
I was happy to do it. My pleasure. And thanks for the opportunity. And let's all have a profitable year.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.